Welcome to The Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson, and today's podcast is about parenting styles. But first, I'd like to always remind you of our books that are available on Amazon Kindle, the Handbook for Raising an Emotionally Healthy Child. It's a great resource for parents of kids of all ages, from birth through adolescence. This first part of what will be a much larger text is all about behavior management. It's all about what behaviors are normal during different stages of development, what parents can do to minimize the effects of those behaviors, but also how to prevent those behaviors from becoming more problematic or persisting much longer than they should. The next two sections of the book, the Handbook for Raising an Emotionally Healthy Child Part 2, Attention, will be coming out later this summer. We are finalizing the last couple of chapters for that section of the book. It's all about how the parent-child interactions, and it's going to be another great resource for parents of children who really want to figure out how to improve and maximize their interactions with their child, and how much attention is the right amount of attention, and how to avoid being overindulgent and giving too much attention, those kinds of things. Section 3 of the book, part 3, is entitled Love, and that's all about the parent-child relationship. And so that book will be coming out later this year. And so keep an eye out for that. Again, obviously, that one's all about the parent-child relationship, how those interactions lead to the relationship between the parent and child, and how that relationship will influence your child currently as well as in the future. So keep an eye out for those. They will both be available on Amazon Kindle later on this year. The Elimination Diet Manual, that's also available on Amazon Kindle. It's a great resource for helping you determine whether or not anything in your diet is affecting your emotional and physical health. 38 days is all it takes to eliminate some of the things that could be causing some problems for you. Research is really starting to emphasize the importance of diet on our physical and emotional health. So it's a simple, direct, easy way to help explore those kinds of issues and see what's if any effect that it may be having on your or your child's life. So check that book out. It's also on Amazon Kindle. Finally, the Parenting Your ADHD Child course is available on paydiallc.com. Links to it are in the show notes, but it's a great resource for, and I guess I'm calling everything a great resource, but it's a wonderful course on parenting children with ADHD and most challenging behaviors. Helps you understand what things that you can do to help create some structure, create order in the home that is going to really help your child behave and respond to things the way that he or she needs to, and the way that you would like for them to. So check out the course, again, paydiallc.com/courses, and you can see the outline, you can see what each lesson includes, you can see lots of the information about the course before you even sign up. Signing up for the course, it costs less than one therapy session, but it's a great source of information for you to use while figuring out how to best parent your ADHD child. So check that out. Let us know what you think. All right, I think that's all of the announcements. I hope that you enjoy this podcast about parenting style, and more importantly, the factors that influence what your parenting style is or will be. So enjoy. Welcome to The Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie. The other day, I was listening to a podcast about attachment parenting. And of course, here I am recording a podcast talking about listening to a podcast. I guess I do a lot of podcast listening. That's really the only thing that I listen to in the car now. And I think that it's wonderful to have podcasts available because it really opens up our ideas and thoughts and really fosters the idea of thinking about things in new and different ways. But I was listening to this podcast about attachment parenting, and the host was talking about whether or not attachment parenting really lives up to the scrutiny of science and what we know about having healthy children that grow up to be successful and do all the things that we would like for them to do. And while I was listening to that podcast, I was really noticing some very interesting trends, some really interesting behaviors in the mother that they used in the interview to talk about attachment parenting. And this mother was talking about why she feels that attachment parenting is so important and why she uses it. And in her discussions, I couldn't help but notice, my gosh, the main reason why she's doing this. She's attributing all of these emotions and thoughts and feelings to her child, but they were all from her. They were all sort of her insecurities, her anxieties, her issues that she was projecting onto the child. And it really got my wheels turning and got me thinking about how much of our parenting style, how much of what we do when we parent is influenced by ourselves, just the way that we are. And so I started doing a little bit of research and looking into it because I know what I teach families that I work with. I know what I teach the parents that I work with, but I thought that I would look up and see what other people have thought about it and what they say. And it is continues to be pretty consistent. There are a number of factors that influence our parenting style. And so the goal of the podcast today is to kind of go through some of those and give you some ideas about how our parenting styles are influenced by other things in our lives, all with the goal really of helping us make adjustments or make decisions about our parenting style to move in a healthier direction, because as we understand more, we're going to make better and healthier decisions. So first, let's talk about what a parenting style is. Parenting style really refers to a set of behaviors, attitudes, beliefs, perspectives, all those things that you use or that a parent uses that influences your interactions and your expectations and your beliefs about your child. So if you are the type of person who, you know, has very high expectations, you expect unconditional compliance and you expect a child to do everything exactly the way that you expect them to do it, then you're going to certainly have one particular parenting style versus a person who says, you know, oh, I think that children should just be able to do what they want to do. They should just, you know, they'll figure out how to survive on their own. You know, I'll provide a roof. There's food in the refrigerator. There's everything that they need is available to them. So when they need it, they will get it and everything will be okay. Clearly, those are two very different perspectives of childhood. And obviously, they reflect two very different parenting styles. Now, generally speaking, there are three main parenting styles that have really been around for a long time that we've talked about. It's the permissive or passive parenting, authoritarian parenting, and authoritative parenting. Today, though, there are many, many more. In fact, as I was doing my research, I found this website called Positive Parenting Ally. And they review 12 different parenting styles. Certainly they include those three, but they included many others, some of which are probably familiar to you, such as helicopter parenting, attachment parenting, and those kinds of things. So there are many different forms of parenting styles, and the nuances that differentiate one parenting style from another really are oftentimes minor. Very minor differences between the different parenting styles, but I think that they do arguably differ in some important ways as well. So even though there's a lot of similarities, there are some differences that are important. Nonetheless, you know, let's talk a little bit about what influences the type of parent that you will be, what influences your parenting styles and the ways in which you interact with your child. Now, that same website, Positive Parenting Ally, did a really nice job of outlining what I agree to be the six primary factors that influence our parenting. Now, I don't know that I completely agree with everything that they wrote, and so we're going to talk about these same six factors, but I'm going to kind of talk about it in a little bit of a different way. The first factor is undeniably culture. Now, I don't think that anyone can deny that your beliefs, your perspectives, your expectations are in large part and oftentimes unconsciously directed by our overall culture. Now, our overall culture, what I'm referring to is Western culture. And what I mean by Western culture is this industrialized, future-oriented, but here in the United States especially, very individualized, very individualistic perspective. And so what we have as our mission, our goals, our value here in the United States, for example, is individualization. We want our children to be successful. We want them to be individuals who can stand apart from others, that stand, you know, that reach the pinnacle of whatever it is that they hope to reach. As a result of that, we oftentimes place our children in situations at younger and younger ages to begin to gain skills and to begin to gain those attributes that we feel is going to lead to a higher probability of success. So we have children who, of course, start sports when they're 3 years old. We have children who start reading and are doing tutoring when they're 4 or 5 years old. And so we continue to push these skills and these attributes at younger and younger ages with the idea that, well, if they start younger, they're going to be much more successful in the future. Now, again, this has a significant effect on parenting because it influences how the parent is going to deal with the child and deal with the child's life. For example, I've talked about this in previous podcasts, but certainly when a parent holds the view or holds the ideal that that the goal of the child is just to be successful, you know, this is what leads to the idea of every player getting a trophy. This leads to the idea that, you know, parents doing homework for their child. And I know that some of you hear that and you think, oh my gosh, I would never do that. It happens. It happens much more often than we would like to admit. We see our children getting overwhelmed, and in our mind, I can't let him or her get an F on this paper. And so we end up doing much of the work for the child. I know of parents who have done entire science projects for their child. I know of parents who have written research papers for their children. So it happens. It's realistic. And much of that perspective is based upon our culture that says failure is not an option. We cannot allow our child to fall short. And so, you know, if he doesn't do what he needs to do, then I'm going to help him, you know, succeed. I'm going to help him get to where he needs to get. If I feel like the teacher didn't do what she needed to do to help my child, then I'm going to get at the teacher, really taking some of that responsibility away from the child, of course. But it's all, again, with the idea that success is the only option, and so we have to push for that. Again, certainly this influences your parenting style. It influences how you're going to interact with your child. It's certainly going to influence your expectations of your child. And maybe even for some of these reasons, it's not surprising that we're seeing such a significant increase in things like anxiety and depression and disruptive behaviors. You know, the higher that we set those expectations, the more diverse and more, quote-unquote, atypical we're going to see children who aren't perfect. So culture absolutely has a major influence in your parenting style and how you interact with your child. The second factor is socioeconomic status. And I don't know that I can emphasize it more, the role and importance of socioeconomic status. We really tend to downplay and ignore these factors that play I mean, socioeconomic status plays a huge role in everything. You're at significantly increased risk for involvement in the criminal justice system if you live in poverty. You are at significantly increased risk for having difficulties, your mortality rate, your health rate, every factor from health through, job success, happiness, life satisfaction in general, all of those things are more greatly influenced by socioeconomic status than anything else. In fact, when we look at a lot of the things that we tend to attribute to race or ethnicity, when we control for socioeconomic status, what we find is race and ethnicity have much smaller of an impact. And again, really the major factor is socioeconomic status. I could do a whole podcast on what I feel about socioeconomic status and the injustice that we seem to do to especially many youth who end up getting a card dealt to them that they can never get rid of, that they will never be able to give back because they end up with a criminal charge or something as an adolescent, and then they're never able to really secure a good job. They're not able to, they have more difficulty going to college and getting a higher education and things like that because of a mistake or some issue that they had when they were a juvenile. And so we're sentencing that person to a lifetime of lower socioeconomic status, again, which increases the risk for unhappiness, mental health issues, and lots of other things. So, but as it relates to parenting, see, I started to go in that direction, but I'm fighting it. But when it comes to socioeconomic status as it relates to parenting, we need to go no further than Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And what that tells us is that when our basic needs, when our more fundamental, foundational needs are not met, or we are concerned that they won't be met, we're not able to move up to higher order thinking, higher order meeting of our needs. So if we're not sure if we're going to have food, then we're not going to be able to learn algebra. So to learn higher order thinking, to learn in school and to be able to engage in those kinds of activities, learning and things like that, we have to make sure that these foundational needs are met. Well, when a person lives in poverty, there's typically permanent, ongoing, unwavering stress about keeping a roof over your head, being able to have food for the next meal. All of those things become uncertain. And so, if you have, a single mother who's working two jobs, trying to keep a roof over her head and trying to keep food in the refrigerator for her kids, it's going to be really difficult for her to sit down and read with her child, or it's going to be really difficult for her to be able to respond, gently and appropriately to her child's emotional needs and behavioral needs and things like that. It's not because she doesn't want to, and it's not that all parents who live in poverty can't do that. What I'm saying is that when we have a situation where individuals live perpetually in poverty, these tend to be really challenging things for them. So it's going to influence how they interact and how they engage with their child. People who don't have those same stresses, those people who maybe are in middle class or have the financial security to know that there's going to be food in the refrigerator and that they don't have to worry about their home, they can be a little bit more responsive and a little bit more engaging. Now, it doesn't mean that they all are. It just means that they tend to have more availability physically, emotionally, and time-wise. They have the more availability to be there for their child. So socioeconomic status certainly plays a role in your parenting style and how you respond to your child. The third thing is your experience. Obviously, our parenting style is influenced by our parents' parenting style. This goes without saying that when you experience something growing up, it's going to influence how you believe a child should or should not be managed as you become a parent yourself. what tends to happen is we tend to go one of two directions. Either we tend to take those things that our parents did that we found to be just and fair and appropriate, things that we could see that because mom or dad did this, I had this positive outcome. We're going to hold on to those and we're going to use those things. On the other side, if there are things that our parents did that caused us problems, that we felt were unfair, that were problematic, that we felt limited us in some way, we're going to discard or reject those ideas. And so while this isn't necessarily to suggest that, well, if you come from an authoritarian parent, you're going to be an authoritarian parent, that tends to be the case. But really what I'm talking about here are sort of the micro decisions, the decision to spank, for example. Many people, when you ask them why they spank or why they don't spank their child, it almost always goes back to their parent. Almost always, they will say, well, my parents spanked me. I turned out okay. It got me to make better decisions, so that's why I use spanking. Or they'll say, my parents spanked me. I hated it. They didn't have to do that. You know, the spanking hurt physically, but really what affected me was when my parents, you know, sat down and talked to me. That was really what made me decide to change my behaviors and make decisions that I needed to make. And so I'm not going to spank. I'm just going to talk with my kids and teach them what they need to do and how to make better decisions. So when it comes to these sort of very specific decisions, very specific parenting techniques, not necessarily the parenting style, but the parenting techniques, much of that comes from almost directly our experience with our parents and what they did with us. And again, what we felt was helpful, what we felt was more damaging than helpful. And we make decisions based upon that. Clearly, that is a major influencing factor for our parenting styles. Now, the fourth thing, we're kind of getting away from ourselves and really kind of narrowing things in a little bit more tightly. And now we're going to talk more specifically about our child's temperament. Your child's behavior directly influences your response to him or her and how you're going to manage him now and in the future. I have seen many times where a parent will begin parenting their child with a particular perspective from a particular parenting style, only to change that completely based upon the child's temperament. You know, if you have a child who has a very difficult temperament, it's hard to be passive. It's even hard to be authoritarian sometimes when you have a child who has a very difficult temperament, because as an authoritarian parent, it's because, you know, you do it because I said so. It's, you know, these are the expectations. It's very rote, very rigid. And you do the same, you know, you try to hold the same expectations as consistent as possible and all those kinds of things. But yet you have this difficult child who may continue to push against you over and over and over again. And we get frustrated as parents. And so what will tend to happen is, you know, the authoritarian parent who has a very difficult child will either become more authoritarian and they will really start to bring the hammer down, or depending on their history and expectations and some other factors, they may seek help to sort of shift in a more authoritative type of parenting style towards, you know, being a little bit more responsive and a little bit more understanding of what's going on with the child so that they can have a better dialogue and better discussion and they can manage the child a little bit better. So when you have a child who has a very challenging temperament, we're going to have to respond. We're going to have to manage things in a very different way, perhaps, than we did with previous children or that we anticipated when we became parents to begin with. You know, we had to do that in my home with my daughter. She very, very smart, very verbal. She was talking at a very young age, but she has a very anxious temperament. And so she didn't respond to changes very well. She had a really hard time. Even when we were going to do something that she really liked, she would get very upset and was just really challenging to manage. And my wife and I, we really struggled for the first little while trying to figure out what to do. And so I talked with some colleagues, because this was when I was still in graduate training. Actually, I was just starting graduate school. And so I was still in graduate training, but I had been working with some developmental specialists and stuff. And we came up with a couple of strategies, and we learned how to help her. We learned the power of the timer. And I think that when I talk about it, sometimes it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but it really isn't an exaggeration, that from the very first time that we tried to use the timer, she changed completely. Now, her temperament did not change. She continues to be very anxious and sort of anxious prone in that direction. And that part of her did not change. However, we learned new parenting techniques that adapted to her and better suited her temperament so that she could make those transitions easily. We could still do and have the expectations that we needed to have, but it didn't sort of conflict with her temperament and her behaviors and her emotions and things like that. It became much more smooth, much more easily managed. But it's because we got information, we shifted. We had to change our parenting style. We were not, as hard as we were going to try, we were not going to change her perspective. We were not going to change her temperament. And as parents, it's really important that we understand that. Changing a person's temperament, this is something that's in the child. This is something that the child is born with. We see temperamental issues from day one. We can see it from the neonate. So you're not going to change that. You can adapt to it. You can learn what the source is. You can learn why it happens and then make adjustments. And that's usually going to be about the best that we can do. Because when we make adjustments, then we start to be a little bit more positively responsive to what's going on. And we can meet the child's needs while also making sure that we do what we need to do or meet our expectations. But again, clearly, our child's temperament really influences our parenting style. Now, the fifth thing is, of course, your temperament. You know, I said just a moment ago that we can't change our child's temperament. And it's very true. We don't really change it. It does kind of morph a little bit as time passes, but it stays generally consistent. And temperament becomes one of the foundations of personality. So when I'm talking about your temperament, I'm really talking about your personality, the way that you see the world, the way that you sort of have expectations of the world around you and things like that. So if you're a high-strung, anxious, sort of fear-prone type of person, you're going to project that onto your child. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier with that podcast I was listening to earlier this week, that, you know, this mother was talking about how when her child is in his room and he's crying, oh, he's just so scared and so fearful. I just really needed to get in there because I don't want him to be scared. I don't want him to be afraid. Well, you know, clearly this 3-month-old is not saying that he's afraid. He's not saying that he's fearful. This is the mother's anxious tendencies. This is the mother's fears that she's projecting onto the child. And she says, oh, this must be why he's doing that. Obviously, that has an effect on the way that we're going to interact with our child. If you see your child as misbehaving because he wants to be defiant and he wants to go against you and because he is just a bad kid, well, you're going to respond to him the way that you would a kid who is intentionally being bad. If you see your child's misbehavior as, you know what, maybe he didn't understand the rules, maybe I need to remind him again for the 50th time today that is not expected, well, certainly that's going to help you respond to your child in a different way. if you're the type of parent who your style is just so laid back, so relaxed that you don't even really pay attention, well, that too is going to affect your interactions with your child because you're just not going to attend to some of those demands and expectations and things that your child's doing. If you're a very egocentric person, narcissistic type of person, and the most important thing in the world is you, well, certainly your child is not going to be at the top of the list. And so you're going to be the type of parent who's going to make sure that your needs are met first, perhaps even before your child's. Now, that shifts a little bit, of course, if you're that narcissistic type of person who says, well, this child is a reflection of me, and so that child needs to be perfect, because if that child is seen as imperfect, then I'm going to be seen as imperfect, and that is not allowed to happen. So I'm going to make sure that my child is seen as perfect every time, because that is then a reflection of me. Now, a lot of these decisions aren't conscious. They aren't things that you actually think about in the way that I just said. However, it is the reality. It is what happens in our minds and in our emotions and in our decision making. Our perspectives of what we expect from our children and how we interact with our children is a manifestation of how we see ourselves and how our own personality influences the way that we see the world. Now, this leads us to number six. And number six is the factor of insight. We have to develop insight because the ability that you have to appreciate the interactions between these other five things that I've mentioned, your ability to see the interactions between these things and make decisions accordingly is going to indicate whether or not you're going to shift or adjust or change your parenting styles or expectations. If you are the type of person, your temperament is very rigid, you grew up in a very rigid home and you felt like, well, I'm very regimented because I grew up in a very regimented home, and so I'm going to have a very regimented home because we want success and we want our children to be leaders and so on and so on. So we have this very rigid, strict, structured worldview that we expect from our child. And then you have a child who's very difficult, a child who pushes every limit that you try to set. Well, you're going to have a decision to make. Either you're going to be fighting a whole lot of battles, or you need to develop the insight you need to see, yeah, what's going on, what my expectations are, do not fit very well with my child's temperament and what's going on with him. And so I need to make some adjustments. In research and in developmental science, we call that goodness of fit. How well does your parenting style fit with your child's temperament? The better the fit, the better outcome for your child. But this insight really is something that has to be developed. And oftentimes, this is where parenting training comes in handy. This is something that we try to do in parent training, where we attempt to help parents understand the interactions between these different factors so that you can take those factors, you can take this information and say, well, because of that, I want to do this, or because of that, I need to change that. I need to tighten things up and be a little bit more strict and rigid here, but I need to loosen up and be a little bit more understanding and lenient here. When we can do that, when we have that level of insight, when we have that kind of appreciation of the interactions between these different things and how we often set levels of expectations that far exceed perhaps what the child is able to perform, or we begin the process with a level of expectation and we never adjust those expectations because we just don't have the ability to see that it's not fitting with what is happening in our home, well, then we begin to really limit our options. We really begin to limit how we can even view our child, and certainly limits how we will be responding to and interacting with our child. So in parenting training and in family therapy and things like that, we really work hard to develop insight so that you have a better understanding of those interactions with your child so that you can make better decisions, make some adjustments as needed, and then really be able to have the type of relationship and raise your child the way that you really want to raise him. Now look, parenting is difficult. You know, these six things, five things plus the insight to understand how those five things interact, those things, you know, no matter how you cut it, are very difficult factors to appreciate. You know, none of us really sit down and say, well, let me think about what this television program I'm watching, how this television program will interact or influence my interactions with my child. We don't really do that, not at least not in a conscious sense. That said, when you're looking at YouTube or Facebook and you see parents using very authoritarian style, very strict, punitive, often, you know, arguably damaging types of parenting techniques with their child, and you look at that and you say, that's what we need more of. We need more parents who's going to have their kids stand out by the road with a sign that says, you know, I lied to my dad. We really need more of that because that's going to change kids' behaviors. Well, if you look at those things and you take that in as, well, that's good parenting, I think that that's where we're really getting in some really bad areas. That is not good parenting. There is nothing about that that is parenting. That is punitive. That is self-esteem crushing. That is emotionally damaging, arguably emotionally abusive to the child. And I know that there's going to be people who listen. Well, actually, people who probably disagree with that probably wouldn't be listening to the podcast, unfortunately. But I know that people will disagree with that. But it's true. When I work with kids whose parents engage in those types of things, it never fails that the child will have emotional and oftentimes behavioral manifestations that are a consequence of that. They will be depressed. They will be anxious. They will be angry. They will be spiteful. They will be vengeful. And they'll, you know, my dad would do this to me, so, you know, anytime he would have a chance, I would do that. And so the child would do things, you know, perhaps because the father or parent expects that the child is engaging in behaviors for willful disobedience, the child will eventually even take that on and say, okay, yeah, if that's the expectation, if that's what I think, what he thinks I'm doing, you know, I'm going to start doing these little things just to upset him because, you know, what's he going to do? What's going to happen? And it's really not how we want to parent and raise our children. Instead, we want to be responsive to them. We want to see what's going on. We want to sort of take this overall picture of the world, what influences us, what has influenced us, what continues to influence us, who our child is, who we are, and put all of these pieces together and parent the child that you have. Don't try to parent this ideal child that you had in your head that, you know, before he or she was even born, you know, you had this image in your head of what it's going to be like to have a kid, you know, what it's going to be like to parent this child. You know, we have those, you know, future images in our mind of, you know, standing while he's standing on graduation, on the stage for graduation. And we have all of these ideals in our head. When we parent the imaginary child that we wanted, and we fail to parent the child that we actually have, well, we run into a lot of problems. We run into a lot of issues, not just for the child, because the child ends up being unhappy and angry and distressed and frustrated, but it also leads to all those same emotions in ourselves. We become frustrated and distressed and upset and anxious and depressed and all of those things because nothing that we're doing is working. We are trying and trying and trying, and I hear this from parents all the time. I'm doing this, you know, I keep doing this. I've taken the Xbox away for 2 months, and I've, you know, he's not been allowed to go outside for 3 months, and he's not allowed to talk to anybody on the phone, and we do all these things, but it's not resulting in the changes that we're looking for. And perhaps, just perhaps, it's because we haven't developed the insight that we need to see whether our parenting style is working and whether adjustments need to be made to better suit our child's expectations and our child's needs and our needs. So, man, this ended up being a very long podcast, so I apologize for that. But I want you to take these things into consideration. I want you to think about these factors and how they influence your parenting. How do they influence the decisions that you make when you're interacting with your child? If adjustments need to be made, if you see, man, I'm trying this thing over and over and over again and it's not working, step back and reflect on that just a little bit and say, you know, am I using a parenting style, some parenting techniques for some of these reasons because I have these expectations and I have these this previous influences? Am I using these techniques but do I need to step back and look and make some adjustments? Do I need to change my perspective a little bit to better suit the world that I and my child live in right now? I think that if you do that, if you're able to reflect, if you're able to step back and look, and you're able to see what's happening in reality, not what you imagine, but see the reality of what's happening and make some adjustments, get the help that you may need, but make some adjustments that are needed, I think that you're going to find that both you and your child are much happier and much more effective in what you're trying to do. You know, remember that our goal as parents are to raise happy, healthy, and self-sufficient children. I didn't use the word success. Success is a personal goal. What I define as success is very different than what you define as success. And so if I'm trying to raise a successful child, certainly I'm doing that from my perspective. I'm doing that from how I define success. And that may not fit with the world that my child lives in. Instead, I need to make sure that I raise a child who's happy, healthy, and self-sufficient, because if my child is happy, healthy, and self-sufficient, he's going to find success on his own, or she's going to do the things and put herself in positions where she can find success. That doesn't have to do with me. I don't need to show my child what success is. I just need to give my child the skills that he or she needs to find success on his or her own. That's our goal as parents. That's our job as parents. And it begins with our parenting style. And our parenting style should be flexible, adjustable. We need to mold it and fit it to what our world is, what your child's world is. And when we do that, then we will find success as parents. All right. Thanks so much for listening. Please write to me and let me know if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, what worked for you, what didn't work for you. You know, again, this have a conversation about this, because parenting is a tough job, and it takes all of us working together and learning from each other to really make some of the changes and decisions that we need to make. So thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Dr. Bernie. Stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.